when the right people come together at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Here we go. It's the best soccer show. Jason Davis, Jared Dubois, live after the United States men's national team took down Jamaica 2-0 at Q2 Stadium in Austin, Texas, which is where I happen to be right now. I'm in a radio booth at Q2 Stadium, quickly emptied out following the festivities. Jared, how you feeling out in the Inland Empire?
Dude, I told you, don't blow up my spot like that. I don't need people to know where I'm at. But I'm feeling good. I mean, with 2-0 wins, so it's a good thing. The Pepe train keeps rolling. I think this is an ideal result for the U.S. A couple of issues with a few things here and there, but overall, I think this is a performance that you wanted to see from the U.S. out the box.
Yeah, it came out very fast. Obviously had the controversial moment with the potential red card. Paul Areola dragged down. Jared, for you, was it a red card?
Yeah, here's the thing. If it's a foul, it's a red card. I say the same thing about both of them. And if it's a foul, it's a red card. I am surprised. I think the referee was not big enough for the moment. I think that's a tough call, but the referees at the highest level need to make it. I think that one's probably even more so than the – well, I guess that one was definitely a foul, where the other one you could debate whether it's a foul. But if the referee's going to blow the whistle
– yes.
If you're going to blow the whistle, that is the most clear last man behind of – either of the two calls. So it's definitely a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the refereeing was kind of dodgy all night, right? There were a couple of moments where I'm like, wow, I can't believe he didn't call that, or he called a foul against the United States that didn't seem to me to be the right call. Now, I'm also obviously biased here. And the good thing about this is that we're not sitting here complaining about the referee after the United States dropped points at home in World Cup qualifying. They came out in the second half, and they took care of business, and it's the Ricardo Pepe story again. El Tren is rolling along, Jared, picking up speed. We're going to need Denzel Washington to stop this train if it keeps picking up speed at this rate. He's a remarkable player because he is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a complete forward. He is absolutely not a complete forward. He does not do a lot of the other little things that, say, a Jossy Zardes does. But you can see the difference from Ricardo Pepe to Jossy Zardes. Jossy gets 3 or 4 decent chances in that second half after he comes on, and he doesn't put them away. And it's not that Jossy's a bad player. It's just that he is going to miss those chances way more than the natural finisher that Pepe is. So you have a trade-off when you talk about these two forwards. And look, if you have weapons like Brendan Aaronson and Yunus Musah, oh my God, can we talk about Yunus Musah? I know it's Pepe, and we're going to be taking phone calls here, but can we talk about Yunus Musah? It was glorious.
Exactly what the midfield was missing in the last window is that player that can get the ball at his feet and break a line. And that's what you did not see at all in the first window, is just too many guys that want to have a neutral mentality in midfield, where Musah, anytime there's space in front of him, anytime there's daylight, he's pressing it. He's making the back line step out to him. And when the back line steps out to him, there's holes. And in those holes, the wingers are going in and cutting in behind and making diagonal runs. Very, very much more dynamic midfield with Yunus Musah in it.
Yes, I think so. And I think you also saw, I mean, and we'll get to this. I have so many thoughts running through my head. When Luca Della Torre got on the field replacing Yunus Musah, he also did several things in that same vein, very nice things that I thought. And look, at that point, Jamaica's chasing the game. They're pretty tired. They're not really putting in the same sort of defensive work that they did in the first half. But you can see why Berhalter called both of those players into camp and how nice it is to have options and depth there. Phone lines are open. That's what this is all about. This is your show, 717-727-2378, 717-727-2378. Best. You see it right there on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube, on Twitter. I think we've got this up on Twitter somewhere. We might even be on Twitch. I don't know. Let's go to Chris from Los Angeles, who wants to talk about the first half. Chris, the first half wasn't good. Why do you want to talk about the first half?
Well, I think, like a lot of us, when we saw the starting lineup, we were pretty, I wouldn't say maybe upset, but like kind of wondering what the hell is going on with Paul Areola, and I would say even Zimmerman starting. But I think those two actually kind of held their own. Where do you guys think this puts Greg with Paul Arriola, even though he wasn't special and didn't create, but he also didn't miss a wide open shot or give a terrible ball away?
You want to take this one? Yeah, for me, I think Arriola, I think the reason he was in there was not necessarily to be the final guy. I don't even know if he was supposed to be the service guy. What he was in there for was energy and coverage for Serginho Dest.
Yeah, even though within the first 3 minutes of the game, Arriola and Aronson are switching sides, and they did that consistently all night long. So I said the same thing in my tweet before the show with the lineup, Jared, that was obviously Arriola is supposed to help cover for Dest bombing up the field. But they didn't really work out that way, and it's fine because they had, 70% possession.
Yeah, so I think Paul Arriola was in there to press. You saw some really good pressure. I mean, there must have been three or four different times where he pressed the Jamaican defense into giveaways in their own third, which led to a couple chances. So I think that's what you wanted from him. I don't know if Arriola starts the next game. I'm not sure if that's – because I don't think Serginho Dest starts the next game, well, despite the injury.
Both of them are kind of situational players. I mean, Dest is obviously the better player if you're going to look at it that way. But Arriola serves a role, and he did tonight. As you said, when you have possession, when you are going to be – when Jamaica does have the ball, you're going to need a presser. That's what he is, as you already said. When Jamaica doesn't have the ball, Paul Arriola is just all over the place. He's just making defenders have to worry about him consistently. And he does not stop running. He just does not stop running. He's got a extra battery pack in there somewhere. Yeah. And so that was the right call. It doesn't mean, Chris, that Paul Arriola is suddenly now up the pecking order and that if the United States is facing Mexico tomorrow at the Azteca, Paul Arriola is in the lineup, because I don't think he is.
Right. I was wondering, while I was watching this game, I'm like, once we qualify for the World Cup and we head into it, where do you guys think – I mean, obviously I'm looking way ahead here, but where do you guys think Greg makes a decision like calling Conrad over him? Did he call him up just because of this window here of the type of teams that we're playing?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jared. I mean, this is going to be really – look, if they qualify, and let's all knock on wood, still some ways to go. This is three important points, but even in this window, we still have questions to answer. But when we get to that point of picking a team to go to Qatar, Jared, it's going to be really, really hard. It's going to be tough.
The depth of this this team this year is going to make a lot of things difficult. And we're still a year away from over a year away from the actual World Cup itself. So there's players out there that may still make their way into this team that right now we're not talking about too much. But the Paul Arriolas, the Sebastian Dest, the Christian Roldan, I think maybe two of those three make that roster in the end, because there's going to be a couple guys with Reyna and Pulisic. We're going to talk about the fact they're not there tonight, and a lot of these guys looked at home in this team. There's a couple guys that are going to be a really hard cut. I think you could potentially say that at the end we're going to have three, four, maybe even five guys that people are going to be disappointed they can't make this roster next year.
I think in the first half, thanks for the call, Chris. I'm going to move on. We got other people waiting, but I think in the first half, I was here watching the game. I'm standing next to Brian Strauss from Sports Illustrated, and what he was saying, and I'm not name dropping Brian Strauss, but I just
hell of a soccer player, one of the best press soccer players out there.
There you go, ding ding. I'll tell Brian later. I'm sure he'll love that. You know what he said was clearly Jamaica was going to sit deep, low block, try to stop the United States at this very, this very reserved line of confrontation. And against Canada, what was missing, the United States was not playing between the lines. They weren't making forward runs out of midfield to make the Jamaicans worry. The United States a couple different times was trying to use a combination on the left-hand side specifically with Arriola dropping kind of into that channel, and then they would play back around. It didn't necessarily come up, but you could see that they had ideas that they were implementing in this game. So it was Canada with better buildup, but not the finished product, not the end product in the first half. And obviously, look, eventually Jamaica was going to crack. And I think you can be encouraged by that, even though they probably left three or four more goals on the table.
I think one of the telling things was that this team forgot its game plan for the last 15 minutes of the first half. I think Berhalter reset at halftime. You saw them coming back again, doing those runs in behind on the wings, the Anthony Robinson bombs, you know, the desk dribbles. I think they went back to what was working the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes of the first half. Yeah. But I think that's a testament of a young team as well. They came out with what they had, the reminder at the beginning of the game of what the game plan was, but you saw them start to play the game Jamaica wanted to play as the first half went on.
Yep.
And I think as they mature, they're going to not deviate so much from what the game, because obviously they could do it anytime they wanted. It just seems like they forgot the game plan and got too much into the rhythm of the game Jamaica was trying to put together.
I do think that, yeah, there's some rhythms to this team, and it happened against El Salvador too, although they didn't get the breakthrough eventually. But there is this tendency to come out hard and fast, to press the advantage, to make the other team sweat. They had a decent chance within the first, well, they obviously created the opportunity for Areola to break out and nearly get the red card instead of the yellow card in the first 3 minutes of the game or whatever that was. They obviously had a couple other chances they didn't put away. And then you start to think, oh man, we're frustrated. And instead of keeping that energy up and going, if you keep running your head to a wall, you're going to stop doing it eventually. And then the play slows down and the dynamic movement stops. And then you get to halftime and Greg, who's not a fiery guy, but obviously reminds them, this is what we should be doing. And they come out with renewed energy in the second half. Let's get to Jeff from LA as the phone lines keep rolling on. Jeff, you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up?
Ladies and gentlemen of the congregation, how are we this evening?
I'm doing well, my father.
I'm right now lighting a candle at the altar of Ricardo Pepi, Jeff.
There you go, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to see you, the king of American soccer and the prince of the Inland Empire. It is an absolute pleasure to be in your presence this evening. Let's get down to brass tacks, boys. Time, and you remember my voice, Jason. I love you, Jason. You are the man, my friend. Okay. Let me tell you something. Time and time again, we hold Greg Berhalter accountable. We hold the United States men's national team accountable. And we pick apart every last thing that happened. Tonight, we all bow down at the altar of Greg Berhalter. We bow down at the altar of Ricardo Pepi. And we bow down at the altar of Yunus Musa. And we thank the dear Lord above that we got 3 points.
Amen.
And you gentlemen, I know, will carry the torch this evening. But you know what? None of these American soccer snowflakes can come up with any sort of splitting hairs. Oh, this didn't happen. That didn't happen. I have a hangnail. I have diarrhea. Not tonight, gentlemen. Not tonight. 3 points in Austin, Texas, and we move on to Sunday. I will see you on Sunday.
But Jeff,
can I get a hallelujah?
Jeff, can we still like be unhappy with Berhalter's choice of wearing a T-shirt?
You know what? I said the same thing. I was like, wait a second. Now we're just doing T-shirts down there, Greg? Let's bump it up just a little. It was warm today in Austin, Texas. I sweated a little bit walking from my hotel.
Wait, is that the past tense of sweat?
Yeah, I sweated. Not sweated, sweat.
Is it? I sweat.
Some perspiration came from my body while I was walking from the hotel, but we had a nice breeze come through right around the middle of the first half. It was beautiful out here, and I thought, hey, Greg, you could have gotten away with a suit. You could have. Yeah, he made his choice, Jared.
Appreciate Jeff getting coming in with his own content. I liked that my man was prepared, had a theme to what he was doing. Came through for the Deacon Deuce over here. You know, wanted to make sure you threw maybe a throwback to back in the day.
What a throwback! Let's go.
But he's right. I know we won't go back to the throwback in a second here, but he's right though. This is one of the first games where there's not really too much to slag Berhalter on, you know, or slag anything on. It's an overall positive performance.
Well, it's not a good Jamaica team. Let's just keep that in mind, okay? I'm not saying that means that the United States shouldn't be praised or Berhalter shouldn't be praised for getting it right. That's a bad Jamaica team. Mike in Philadelphia.
Michael fucking Orozco Fiscal.
There you go.
I don't know how I followed just his spiritual successor. That was wild.
You have to try.
Man, Ricardo Pepi. That was, dude, the guy. I don't know he gives me, and I don't want to say we're the same type of player because we're not, but like he gives me like pre-accident Charlie Davey vibes. Mm. He really is just like, he just nose for goal. Yes. I love it so much. And that's really all I call it. I really don't have much to say other than like Pepe is the chosen one, man. He's the real deal.
I get the feeling he's kind of just like, he's like the water boy. The dude just really likes what he's into, and he's into scoring goals, man. Like the dude is like, that's quality H2 goal, you know, like that. He just is, he's simple. I think my man wakes up every morning thinking about goals. He goes to sleep thinking about goals, and he just does it. He's not flashy in any regard, horrible in the press. But at the end of the day, the guy just scores goals. He's simple, man. And I'm all here for it.
This is one of those things where, you know, we've complicated this game a lot. And I had a conversation yesterday with actually, that was today. My days are running together. I had a conversation today with one Alexi Lalas on my radio show. Jared.
Just drop after drop.
Did you know I had a radio show? That I did it from Austin, Texas this week? Did you know?
In that very room?
In this very room. I talked to Alexi Lalas in this very room. And you know, you vacillate. You go back and forth between kind of overrating the intangible stuff, the fight, the spirit, the just kind of, he knows how to score goals. Ricardo Pepi just knows how to score goals. You kind of, you can get lost in that and forget that there is good information, but you also don't want to sometimes complicate. You don't overcomplicate this game, right? This is, ultimately, it's a simple game. Ball goes in net. And Ricardo Pepi puts ball in net, whether he has enough touches or completes enough passes or presses enough times or holds the ball up or anything like that is kind of it should be secondary to the fact that the man puts the ball in the back of the net.
I remember at one point thinking to myself, I had this thought, he hasn't touched the ball in 20 minutes. I mean, I remember thinking at one point, he hasn't. But at the same time, in the back of my head, I was like, he didn't touch the ball for 20, 30 minutes in the Honduras game. But when it's he just needs that moment. He needs that moment. But the U.S. needs to start playing like they understand who Pepe is. There's a number of times where Anthony Robinson turned the corner, didn't do the first-time service. Get the first-time service in from the wings. We're overcomplicating a little bit with the pullbacks, trying to get the perfect play in. This guy needs service. And what you can say is Pepe didn't touch the ball for 20, 30 minutes at one point. I'm probably over-exaggerating, but it was like that.
He also
didn't see a service during that time. He's not the guy that's going to come back and get the ball. That's not him. He's going to stretch the defense.
Right. So he was trying to do that in the first half, and I was watching him because I noticed, okay, I haven't thought about Ricardo Pepi in my head. I haven't seen him. I haven't noticed him. And I'm watching him a little bit, and he does not make sophisticated runs yet. Okay. He does not have the sort of innate knowledge. He's not a Wando. He's not a think about those center forwards. I mean, I watched Lukaku score a goal today that was absolutely bonkers. He doesn't make those runs, but he makes runs. And there were moments because Jamaica was obviously worried about their line of confrontation and being challenged with the ball coming forward. Not as much from Yunus Musa as I would have liked in the first half, but he did do it occasionally, and Weston McKennie. And I thought, just give Pepe a chance.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of space there. You're going to have to be really fine with your ball, but give him a chance. Put it to his feet. And I think there was one moment where I'm like, that's the first time I've seen them play to Pepe's feet all day long in the first half. Obviously, in the second half, things got a little bit better.
Yeah, and speaking about Pepe, Nikki's dropping in saying a couple of quotes. This one from Charlie Bohm quoting Greg Berhalter in the press conference that Berhalter saying, we're all excited. I mean, for us, we're just sitting there and we're on the train, you know. We're just observing everything that's happening. It's amazing. An 18-year-old gets an opportunity and takes advantage of it. And that's how we all feel, right? It's like, wow, this is actually happening. I mean, the last time that there was a guy super young that came in and scored a lot in his first games was Eddie Johnson. Like, Eddie Johnson's the last guy that really just came in at 18, 19 years old, scored a bunch of goals, and we're like, wow, we have a chance here. I mean, Eddie Johnson did a serviceable career, but maybe Ricardo Pepi takes it next level.
Yeah, it's let's hope that it continues. Let's go to Felix in Chicago. What's up, Felix?
Hey guys. One comment and then kind of a question. So my comment is, it's interesting. You guys are talking about Pepe a lot, right? And of course he deserves a lot of credit. It's interesting. You think about Pepe and his nose for goal and how he didn't really do much in the game in terms of the little things, right? Pressing and connecting the attack, all that. But he scored two goals. And then we talk about players like Zardes or Sargent who do all the little things, but they need five chances to score one.
Mm-hmm. I'll take the other one.
It's an interesting dynamic. Right. I'll take the goals too, right? But it's interesting because we get caught up in that. And, well, they do all the little things, but at the end of the day, we got to score goals. So that was my comment.
Right. Felix, real quick, I think you take the goals because, and, you know, obviously this was a slightly different team, because on a good day with healthy players, you have Christian Pulisic, you have Giovanni Reyna, you have Brendan Aaronson, you have several. Tim Weah was really good when he came on tonight.
Yeah.
You can see that they have weapons from other parts of the field. Not that those players are going to get sort of the goal reps, the goal opportunities that a center forward will, but you can say, all right, I got a guy who's going to drift out of the game. I got a guy who's not going to touch the ball, but I have all these other weapons. I can trust them not only to maybe score a goal and cover for his paucity, but also maybe set him up in ways that that one chance he gets, as we said, he finishes, whereas a Zardes, a couple of times tonight, just this much, right? Just getting to it's like that you know that game where you put the coin in?
He had three chances, I think.
Or on the shelf, and that coin is going to push everything off, but it doesn't ever push anything off?
My favorite arcade game, by the way.
That is Jossi Zardes. That is Jossi Zardes in a nutshell.
So close. Oh, my God. It's right there. It's right there. Fall.
Right, and I don't want to.
Not him, the coins.
And I don't want to slag. I'm not trying to slag off Zardes or Sargent, right? Yeah. I mean, I think that those what they bring has value, right? Especially if you're like winning a game and you're trying to close a game down. You know, you want to take Pepe off. You want to take this guy out, put someone on who does do a lot of that defensive stuff to press or to create chances or disrupt possible attacks, you know, by whoever the team that you're beating. But I just wanted to make that comment. And then my question was going to be this. So I think, I don't remember the exact time, but Pepe and Aaronson came off in the 60-something minute. And then I think, 5-10 minutes later, I can't remember who else came on. So with that knowledge, with that context, and then Dest came off too, right? He had to look like he had a little knock. We think how the rotation's going to look in the Panama game? Because my guess is, because Aaronson and Pepe came off early-ish, they're probably starting in Panama. But I don't know what we might see change completely.
I don't know if it was the plan game. I don't know if it was the plan from the beginning. Yeah, that's a good question. I was thinking about talking about the same thing myself. And I don't know that the plan was to start them in Panama. I honestly don't know if that was part of his plan to play Aaronson and Pepe from the beginning again in Panama. But now, with that result getting 2-0 early enough, and them only putting 60 minutes or so on their bodies,
right?
Maybe they're in play now.
Well, I think you know, I think that Berhalter may be thinking about this window differently as opposed to the last one, and it's what Tyler Adams talked about in the sense that you should focus on the game in front of you and get 3 points, and then whatever happens, then you kind of reassess and you look, oh, well, we had a chance to get Tyler Adams off tonight, right? Like, that's
agreed, because don't you feel in the last window Berhalter had all three lineups in his head beforehand?
I think he probably did.
There's some injuries. But don't you feel like he had planned it out in his head? He had a dream board in his room of all three games with all these yarns connecting each player's face to each other with hearts. And at the end, he was forcing things that didn't have to be forced just because that's what he wanted to do. Instead of looking and seeing what was working.
Right.
I think he's made that change now with this window.
Yeah. So you can start guys that got off the field earlier because of the state of the game and because you were controlling it and you were still creating chances, and there really was no sense that Jamaica was going to – I mean, I don't think – Jamaica had a couple of counterattacking opportunities in the first half that got a little dicey, but I don't think there was anything in the second half. Matt Turner with a save, is that right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, stretch out to his right.
Yeah, so, you know, you didn't need to – you didn't need to keep those guys on. I mean, let's see. I'm looking at the substitution. So – Zardes comes on for Pepe in the 68th. Weah comes on for Aaronson in the 68th. Moore comes on for Dest at 77. Luca De La Torre comes on for Musa at 77. Acosta comes on for Adams at 83. Would have liked that to happen a little bit earlier, but I get it.
But think about that 68-minute substitution again. That is Zardes for Pepe, and it is Weah for Areola, correct?
Aaronson.
for Aaronson, excuse me.
Yeah.
And what is there? Did Ariola come off at all? No, he didn't.
No, he went 90, and I think that maybe that was the at that point that was the thought. This is a game made for Ariola, whereas maybe the Panama game is not the same sort of game for him.
But I think this is a good substitution because in bringing off Aaronson, you're losing the speed. He replaces the speed with Weah, so there's a like for like there. But with the Zardes for Pepe, you're getting Zardes who's going to do a lot of the closing out game things right. Yeah. The things that an 18-year-old may not think to do, well, who's only thinking about scoring.
You know what else closes out games, Jared? Another goal.
Yeah.
Another goal change closes out the game. All right, Felix, sorry, you got anything else?
No, I just want to say I remember listening to your guys' show when it was truly just a podcast. Like I'm talking maybe 10 years ago. I remember Jarrett when you like tried out for World Soccer Daily. I've been listening to your show.
Oh, I did.
Jason, since your first marriage. I've enjoyed your guys' show for a long time. It's a joy to kind of jump back on again and kind of get back into this and to listen to you guys. And I'm really enjoying it and looking forward to calling in and talking to you guys more. Thanks.
Love it. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Love it. Felix in Chicago. That's brilliant. That's what I like to hear.
And for the record, I didn't try out. I just happened to go on it once. You know, I don't think it was a tryout. But, yeah.
I forgot about that. There's things I've done that I forgot about. I forgot you did some stuff back in the day. All right, JT in Chicago has been waiting patiently. JT, you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up?
What's up? Love the show. Love Ricardo Pepe, obviously. I want to talk about chance creation tonight and throughout qualifying. In six of the eight halves, we created six shots on goal. And then in the second half of the last game and this game, 15 shots on goal.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's a problem, but it feels like one. And especially tonight, that first half, our heat map looked like a horseshoe because we didn't play a single ball through the middle. So is that shot on goal drought in those six halves worrying them? Or are we taking these 15 shots on goal in the second half and thinking Berhalter knows how to adjust? Maybe.
Sure. I mean, I think in the first half, Jared, Jamaica was willing to concede the flanks, or they just did the system that they played defensively allowed the U.S. to have a lot of space. They really weren't taking as much advantage of it as they probably could have. But to the point that you made earlier, there is a question of Robinson playing those early balls, those first time crosses that he wasn't, because they were trying to break Jamaica down on the flanks. I mean, again, getting in dangerous balls. And sometimes it's dumb luck. They fired in how many crosses the first half? If it finds a foot, an American foot instead of a Jamaican one, I don't know. You can talk about the quality of the cross, I guess, but those were dangerous moments for Jamaica.
Yeah, but to speak what you're talking about, the horseshoe for the American side, and there's a reason why there's a correlation between that shape and the fact that we're talking about we didn't see Ricardo Pepe for 20, 30 minutes. Because that shape doesn't involve Ricardo Pepe. And I think there is something to be said about the first half starts for Greg Berhalter. This team it doesn't struggle with the game plan. It struggles executing. And I feel like every game, we talked about this already with the first half here, but I think this first half is indicative of a number of other ones where they lose their plan as the first half goes on for some reason. And I don't know what's happening there that they seem to lose confidence if they don't get a goal in the first few minutes or something like that. You know, there's a lot of I don't know, like pride, or even I would say, is moxie a word people say in the 21st century?
Yeah, old people like you do.
They have the swag in at the beginning. You know, they're these young guys, they think they can beat anyone. And when things don't go right the first 15, 20 minutes, I feel like they lose their identity a little bit. But then again, when they have 2-0, all of a sudden you're seeing back heels over, like step overs, movement of the ball. Well, once that starts flowing, they have that confidence again. And by the way, I'm going to call out Austin and fans and like U.S. home fans in general. In the second half, when we're up 2-0 and we're stringing together 30, 40 passes really nicely, why are we not Olaying the team?
Okay. Yeah, why did I notice we were doing I Believe at that point? We shouldn't be doing I Believe.
We should be doing Ole. That's the difference in American mentality versus like Mexico.
Yeah.
We don't press a home field advantage. You should be making these guys feel bad about their choices in life to play soccer by Oleing them when this happens. Bad sportsmanship. That's what I want to see from the crowd.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a thing. You know, JT, I think you know, I would worry more if we didn't see two out of the last three halves be good, right? I would worry more. I don't know that necessarily the second half in Honduras feeds into this game or feeds into the Panama game. We'll see. This one has more of an impact on the Panama game than the Honduras match does. But you're seeing that they do not completely drift out. And I think, by the way, again, in this case, you're taking the ball because Jamaica just doesn't want it. They were good enough defensively. There were a couple of moments, like I said, but they were good enough defensively that I'm not overly concerned. Yeah, you'd like to have more really, truly good chances. You'd like to have shots on goal, right? But I don't know that shots on goal is always the best measure of how well they're playing, right? Like, but there is something to be said for, hey, maybe pull the trigger every now and then. I think Weston took a shot, went wide, but I think Weston was the only one who tried something from 20 to 25. I do think they need to add that. Every now and then, somebody needs to I'm going to take a flyer here. Let's see what happens, because you got to keep the defense honest in ways that they didn't as much as they could.
Matt, if you're going to rock a patch in your head, you got to be willing to take a shot from 25 once in a while, ill-advised.
That's what I'm saying. All right, JT, last thoughts here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had three attempts in the first half, none on goal. And, yeah, I mean, the old saying, yeah, if you don't buy a ticket, you can't win the raffle. And I wish we were buying a few more tickets somewhere in front of the goal instead of hoping the cross gets through a gap in the defense.
I would settle for a couple first-half tickets. The second half, we seem to do fine.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, JT, appreciate the call. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Eric in D.C. Eric in D.C., you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up?
Hey, Jason, Jared, big fan. Jason, I listen to United States of Soccer every day. Love your commentary. Earlier, there was a guy talking about, let me first throw some allegiance out there. I literally used to be a Dallas Burn fan. I grew up in Dallas. You know, the Dallas Cup is a thing that a lot of people, I think, underestimate around FC Dallas producing a talent. There's a long-term history of soccer development out of the Metroplex that people need to respect in Texas. But I wanted to talk about El Tren. You know, us FC Dallas fans have known for a long time that Ricardo Pepi is a complete striker. He doesn't score more in FC Dallas because he doesn't get proper service from the wings, in effect. Him and Jesus are the only throughput for the offense there. And as soon as he got some world-class talent wings in the form of Brendan Aaronson and, you know, Paul Arriola today, I knew he was going to blow off. But there was earlier a caller who said that Ricardo Pepi does not do the small things, the hard work. I categorically, completely disagree with that. The first play of the game, in effect, right, where Arriola basically drew almost a red, there was an amazing hold-up play by Pepi and threw ball through. And FC Dallas fans understand this. He is great in distribution and hold-up play up in the high upper third. Also in the latter half of the first half, he did a press back into the top half of the U.S. half of the field to do pressing on some attacking fullbacks for Jamaica. People underestimate the small parts of his game, the things that make people special. And tonight we saw two things that make him, I think, a world-class striker, which is his positioning and his ability to find space. And then he's got finishing that we've never seen in a striker before. He just needs to get some service, and he will blow up once he gets over to Europe.
Let me ask one question to our guy right here, Eric. As a self-professed Dallas Burn fan, the relationship he has with Jesus Ferreira and what Jesus Ferreira does and where on the field he plays. Now, Jesus Ferreira plays more forward on the field, but I think there's a – let me know if you feel
this is –
it's
almost like a shadow nine, in effect.
Okay, so think of the part of the field that Jesus Ferreira is successful in, behind Ricardo Pepi and coming forward. And that's where you saw Yunus Musa have success in this game. And that's also the part of the field – that's the part of the field that you saw Leggett and Roldan – move more into in the second half of the Honduras game. I think Pepi works really well when someone like Jesus Ferreira is playing in that space directly behind him, running towards him, pulling a defender. And that's what Greg Berhalter needs to lean into, and that's what Musa is doing quite well. And I think that's why you're going to continue to see success when those two players are on the field together.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Well, and also it goes back to why him and Aaronson, I think, have amazing chemistry, because Aaronson does cuts into the middle, pull fullbacks off, right, and center backs off, but then create space, and Pepi finds that.
I'm excited to see more of it, man. I hope Jesus Ferreira gets a chance at some point.
I mean, it's a tough team to break into right now. I mean, it's pretty wild. Eric, thank you very much for the call and for the. I think that's the conductor of the Ricardo Pepi hype train, El Tren. And by the way, I should know, since Eric called in and he's an old school Dallas Burn fan, I said this on Twitter earlier. I don't know if we talked about the origin of the nickname. I probably did.
I have no idea.
Buzz Carrick of ThirdDegree.net, which is an OG American soccer blog.
Sure.
They have been covering Dallas since 1996. I'm not kidding. Yeah. Buzz was in on the ground floor. Buzz Carrick is the one, while Ricardo Pepi, when he made his debut for North Texas SC, his first ever professional game, and scored in that game, I think he might have scored two goals in that game, he's the one that said, oh, he's like a train out there. And then he said, oh, wait, I think El Tren in Spanish sounds better. Buzz Carrick gets credit for the El Tren nickname, which is now sweeping the nation.
By the way, third degree is as old. I mean, for people that know what Third Degree is, like, you still remember Not Doug Liman and these other blogs and stuff that were out there back in the day. Shout out to all those blogs back in the day and the fact that one's still out there doing it right.
Yeah, Buzz is at it, and it's a good time to be behind Ricardo Pepi and on that train. Not necessarily to be an FC Dallas guy. There is a question of, you know, Ricardo Pepi's future, and maybe we can address that at some point. I want to go through, Jared, and the phone lines are still open, 717-727-2378. I want to go player by player, position by position, and get your thoughts on the overall performance. I mean, this is not a in-depth watch-back situation. Maybe we watch some footage and we change our opinion a bit, but I'm going to start in the back. Obviously, Matt Turner had one big moment. Otherwise, was you know, he was fine. I think he was comfortable with the ball. I don't think there were any moments where I thought, oh, that was the wrong choice.
I thought his the distribution with his arms, like his throw, it released a counterattack at one point that was quite successful through Anthony Robinson.
Very clearly left-footed, like very left-footed, right? We're pretty sure about that he's very left. New England Revolution fans can tell me.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
It seemed to me that he did not like the ball on his right foot, but that's okay.
I don't think he likes the ball on his feet in general.
Yeah, well, there's that too. I mean, he's a goalkeeper. He wants to pick the ball up and stop shots.
Matt Turner's the number one. Anyone that's telling you that there's a controversy or there's a battle going on is trying to get content.
Okay. Well, I don't think anybody really – I think we're at the point now where most American soccer fans, U.S. men's national team fans, believe that Matt Turner's the number one. But there is that weird thing, that the fact that Zach Steffen was, that he only sort of lost his job because he got COVID or had a COVID positive. And, you know, does Berhalter need to keep
– You're assuming even then that he had the job still.
Well, Matt Turner that's true. Was great that's an assumption on my part. We don't know if Berhalter had already decided on Turner before they even left for El Salvador, but –
Turner, you know, number one, and he had a great game tonight, doing everything he was asked to do.
Okay, then let's go to the back line. I'll start with the center back. So Miles Robinson and Walker Zimmerman. Now, Walker Zimmerman was a tiny bit of a surprise to start, only because he was a late addition to the roster when Tim Ream left, which maybe indicates that Tim Ream was going to start the game. I don't know. It obviously worked out, and I think Walker was good. I think in the air, when that was necessary, Walker was pretty good.
It's smart to play a four-back system because in this three windows and not bringing in a replacement for John Brooks, you don't really want to play three of their center backs. We only have four total, in any of these games. So, and I think the four-back system works better, as we said in the past, for this team. I think Walker Zimmerman showed that he is a World Cup qualifying level center back, and I think most of us knew that already. Yeah. Berhalter, for some reason, doesn't rate him, it doesn't seem like. But give him minutes here, solid. And I think the Zimmerman and Miles Robinson combination is one of the better combinations that we have at center back. I think Berhalter just doesn't rate Zimmerman's speed and athleticism. But with Miles Robinson there, you don't necessarily need that because I think Zimmerman's better in the air. And some of these teams, you're going to need a team, especially on the away games. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zimmerman get another game.
I don't think that Zimmerman's dominant on the level of John Brooks in the air, but at the same time, at least recently. Okay, this is not he's better than John Brooks. Clearly he's not. I do wonder about Brooks and where he sits and how he fits into the picture later on after what happened against Canada and Honduras. But Walker Zimmerman's a very serviceable center back. And
Miles Robinson is the locked-in starter, and Zimmerman is in the conversation, may even be the guy while John Brooks is out. In terms of the fullbacks, I think Anthony Robinson did a good job going forward. I think he gave the ball up more often than you would like. I don't think he looks super comfortable. I think that an injury is still plaguing him a little bit. I just think that there's a few times where he lost the ball when he wouldn't normally. And then with Sergiño Dest, I think I would give him a moderate score. I think you saw what makes him dangerous at the end, but I think he was a moment of brilliance in a game of averageness.
He is so fun to watch, at the same time maddening to watch, because he is so confident on the ball. He will try to dribble five players when he's got two open teammates nearby. Yeah. I think Anthony Robinson tonight, well, passable in most situations, and I think he defended relatively well. I had to think about it and go back.
Agreed.
He struggled to read teammates when passing. He just had an issue. He misread a couple of different moments, gave away the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know what was off about
and
that.
And hesitant with that first-time service into the box. I want to see that first-time service.
Yeah.
Good strikers, guys like Pepe who are instinctual, they want that first-time service.
Okay, I'm going to pause us talking through this and go to our friend Jonathan Tannewell, JTT, to talk
OMG.
About Brendan Aaronson. What's up, JTT?
I have to. I was on the post-game Zoom calls with Greg Berhalter, who is, I'm sure you've already discussed, said we're all excited. We're just sitting there and we're on the train.
Yeah.
About Ricardo Pepi. And then Brendan Aaronson comes in the room. And he's getting asked various questions. And he says that Paxton played with Ricardo Pepi growing up. I know I'm old, but come on.
Growing up? Is the kid even grown up yet, John?
By that old, Lauren?
Is that our cap Paxton? Is that our cap Paxton Aaronson kind of moment, just to get the combination of the two Aaronsons and Pepe together on the field at one time? Is that what we need to do?
I mean, that's one of the questions we have in this town, is whether the two Aaronsons are in fact going to play in a senior level game together someday.
It'd be interesting. I mean, they play two different parts of the field, so there's a possibility.
Yeah. Other than that, the point you guys just made, I thought Walker Zimmerman did his job reasonably well tonight, and that was enough.
Yeah, that's, you know, again, there was a time, there was a time not that long ago when if the United States lost a player like John Brooks to an injury or had a player pull out of a team like Tim Ream. And even though people don't always rate Tim Ream, you can see the value that he brings to this group. And he certainly plays at a high level. You know, not everybody can be a Champions League level player. The United States certainly hasn't always had Champions League level players. There was a time when having, you know, replacing those guys would have been, if not, you know, difficult, it would have been also been scary. There would have been call-ups for players that maybe we didn't think really rated at this level. And here we are. You know, a center back may not be the deepest spot, although, God, you have Chris Richards playing at Hoffenheim who didn't get on the field tonight. Recognize how far we've come. Now, there is something to be said about how very few of the foreign-based players are sort of central figures in their team, meaning they're almost always on the team sheet as a starter. That's true of Christian Pulisic. It's not – Gio Reyna's he's an exception to this. Brendan Aaronson is an exception at a lower level club. So, you know, you need players like a Walker Zimmerman, who is such a key – he is the guy in Nashville defensively.
You could say defender of the year, maybe?
Defender of the year at Nashville. I mean, there's nothing wrong with calling up defender of the year.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Max Crippo just football tackled Chucky Lozano.
I was trying to pull up the scoreboard.
I've got Canada Mexico on the corner.
Yeah, I was trying to pull up the scoreboard.
Literally just football tackled. It's 1-1.
Oh, is it?
I kid you not. I just literally turned around and saw Max Crippo football tackle Chucky Lozano. I wanted to say one other thing about Zimmerman. It was a play that I thought of while you were talking. It was early-ish in the game where there was a two-on-two with Jamaica in the attack, and Dest and Anthony Robinson had both gone forward. and Zimmerman and Miles Robinson had sat back so that everybody else could go forward. I think you need a little of that sometimes, especially in World Cup qualifying. I thought that was a good thing.
Yeah, especially with Miles Robinson's proclivity to step into the midfield and how good he is when he does. Having that guy that's willing to stay home and that's going to just do the adult thing every once in a while, I think is a really good thing. I'm a big fan of Walker Zimmerman. I hope he gets more chances. He's just an old school classic defender, and there's still a place for that in the world.
Yeah, I think so. Jonathan, you got anything else before I let you go?
Oh, that's it. Thanks, though.
All right, JTT on the
JTT.
Horn. Love it. Love it, JTT jumping in here. I was just trying to think through, some of that stuff with the back line and Walker Zimmerman stepping up. And you know, obviously there's a clamoring for Chris Richards because he is younger and he's playing at a higher level in terms of the league and all of that. But again, this is a process that's going to require a lot of different kinds of players. And we go back to talk, and we'll get to the wingers here in a second, but we talk about Paul Areola. Again, he's not going to be in every qualifier, and he's not going to start maybe against higher-level teams in CONCACAF. But in this game, he had value, and the things he does well, even if they're not as refined in the final third as, say, a Timothy Weah, is something that you'll need at various points. All right, let's go to the midfield here, Jared, after talking about – and oh, sorry, I wanted to make one more point about Sergiño Dest. Just in terms, again, I think I mentioned him trying to dribble players. He is the guy that has to be on the field because he can pull some magic out, but he's also the guy that scares you the most. And that's not, it did not change tonight. I saw
he's the guy that wears a gold chain in the pool. Just because you got to make sure you're always on, you know, like even if you're in the pool and there's no reason to have a gold chain on, you still do it because you need everyone to know who you are.
He's gold chain guy. He's also the guy, man, he's like the pickup basketball player who's got every trick, everything in the bag that you can have as a basketball player. I mean, incredible handle, shoot from anywhere on the court. But when he shows up and when you see, like, he'll dominate a certain set of players, but then, you know, you put him in a higher level, and suddenly all of that razzle dazzle, he gets punched in the face. He doesn't.
Basically, you're saying he's an and-one player.
He's a bit of an and-one player, is what it is. I mean, that's not really going too far afield with the thought.
Maybe
there,
he skipped my Lou, an and-one player that's capable of being in the NBA.
Are you going to call him Skip to My that might be a good shout. We might have to call Sergiño Dest Skip to My Lou. All right, I do have Matt from Palmdale waiting, but I want to get to the midfield before we do that. So give me your thoughts here. We already talked about Yunus Musa quite a bit. By the way,
I don't know if he coined this, but there was a gentleman, I think it was Wesley, in the chat before we were getting started, had the greatest name for this midfield. I don't know if he made it up or if it's out there already. I apologize if it's already been out there and I just haven't seen it. MMA.
Oh, snap. Yeah, it's right there, right? It probably comes from
McKinney, Musa, and Adams, man. MMA, baby, no holes barred.
Yeah, you know, So Adams, we know, did the yeoman's work, did what he's supposed to do. I don't have any issues with Tyler Adams tonight. I didn't see that loss of concentration. I didn't see him make silly decisions. I saw him put in the full effort. He covers so much ground. You kind of forget about Tyler Adams in a good way because he's so dependable right there.
I thought there was a number of times where he covered Miles Robinson even when he stepped into the midfield. And I just think that there's something to be said about a guy that just always knows where on the field he should be. His pressing is so good when he chooses to step. I mean, he just reads the game like a book, man. Go ahead.
Well, no, he's Gary Payton. He reminds me of a basketball player.
So that's such a good shout. Like the Gary Payton, the 90s basketball players that actually cared about playing defense, the Gary Paytons, the Eddie Jones, you know, those guys that just, they were in your pocket. I told a kid on my kid's soccer team the other day playing, that was playing defense, I want to know what his underwear smells like at the end of the game. Those are the type of guys that you want. You want guys that are so close that they can tell that. So Adams, star for me. Musa, a little bit of a rough start, I think, the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, maybe.
After that, I think he really found the game. Another star of the day in Musa. I think McKinney was serviceable. good.
Yeah.
I don't think he was poor. I don't think he was great. I think he did a good job of I think he was more the tempo player, deciding when to press and when to not and to take the foot off the pedal. And you need that player on the field. And I think for a lot of fans, they think Weston McKennie's role is to do something else. I think that kind of is his role, basically. And it's what people, the players like Sebastian Lejet get slagged for all the time, is that they take their foot off the pedal sometimes. But your team needs you to do that, to pivot and change the point of attack.
Yeah, it's a good one. All right, so let's go to Matt from Palmdale before we talk about the forward line. Matt, you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up?
Hey, I just want to say that I love you guys' show. You guys are awesome, hilarious, and make watching the USMNT so much more fun. And I thought it was really funny talking about Des, how he wears the goat chain, and then, well, he's totally that guy. I thought it was hilarious. But,
right?
Yeah. In a Speedo, by the way. He's wearing a Speedo. 100% a Speedo.
Yeah, he wants to know what, what he's packing.
I don't know. With two girls in each arm, I'm a douchebag, but we still got a hold of him. But I just kind of – I know you guys were just talking about Musa, but just talking about the creativity in the first half. Is that on the coaching or is that on the players? Is it nerves or – I know a lot of these guys are still young, but you just really didn't see a lot of creativity from Musa. They wanted to push the ball forward. Does that fall on Greg?
I'm starting to not hold Berhalter accountable for this. I mean, ultimately, he's accountable for anything that happens on the field. But I don't necessarily think it's his fault. I think that we're just seeing a personality flaw associated with really young talent. They obviously, Berhalter's obviously giving them the message. They come out of every stoppage with the right message, and they play the right game after every kind of stoppage that there is. It's the ability to manage it in the game. And that's where we've talked about this before. Who's the mature veteran on the field that's the coach on the field? I think Adams is a great choice from this class to be the captain, but is he really there yet where he knows the coach's plan and can execute it on the field? The Robbie Keane's, the Patrick Vieira's, these guys that were coaches on the field.
The Michael Bradley's. The Michael Bradley.
Did I say Robbie Keane? I meant Roy Keane's.
Sorry. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Robbie Keane was more like, why didn't you pass me the damn ball? Well, actually, Roy was probably like that. Anyway. Yeah. Go ahead.
I feel like a lot of people are, I'm seeing on Twitter, and then you guys kind of spoke on too, with Weston McKennie. Some people were, you know, kind of satisfied with him. I just really missed the Weston McKennie, watching him when he was a little younger and just being like, okay, this guy might be like the captain one day, you know? And you hear rumors of him just being lazy on his fitness, and obviously with the whole thing that happened in the last window. But do you guys see Weston kind of elevating? He's 24 years old. I feel like he's like the oldest of like this young generation. Do you guys see him picking his game back up and accelerating again?
I think the last month might convince him to change his stripes.
Oh, God. Really? Okay, sure.
You're just jealous you didn't think of it.
No, yeah, okay. Whatever. You get points for that. I'll give you that.
I really think this how he responds over the next 6 months from this period he's gone through the last 4 weeks, it's going to tell you if he's that guy or not.
I forget he's going. Just one question before you guys keep going. If he is not going to be that guy, then who can be?
It has to be Adams.
I mean, it has to be Adams. I think, man, look, I don't know if position matters here. Like, I think...
In regards to a center mid, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, Weston McKennie has all the talent to hold down that position for as long as Michael Bradley held down that position. And he is good enough to play at a higher level. And certainly, again, the attitudes about Americans helps here, too. He's also a better athlete than Michael Bradley ever was.
If you want the fiery captain, it's going to be Gio Reyna.
Right, but I think in terms of that position on the field and got the guy who grabs the game and makes it work. I mean, again, sitting there watching the game, talking to people, watching Matt Weston McKennie try to figure out how to play the Michael Bradley ball. You know what I'm talking about, Jared?
What are you talking about?
The prototypical Michael Bradley ball, he's I don't know, 50 yards from goal, 60 yards from goal. He picks his head up and he plays the ball out to the wing, and it is drop pin on a map perfect, right? And that's not what Weston McKennie is great at right now. And so but you can see him trying to find that. He also, this is just an observation. I noticed this in a Juve game a couple weeks ago. I think he's really trying to hone those little flick-offs, those little, like, side-footed layoffs for teammates?
I think they're kind of working, too, if your teammate reads it. And I think when he's with Dest, Dest reads that. I think he plays similar. He's looking for those same touches. When he's near someone like a Anthony Robinson or a Paul Ariola, I think that comes off because they're not ready for that tight space touch, whereas Dest seems to be ready for it. So I think they're on the same page when it comes with that. And I think Pulisic will be on the same page for that as well. But there's a few players that are not playing that kind of ball right now.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, Weston McKennie's going to have a very good club career no matter where he goes. I really believe that. And I do think that he's going to figure some things out in terms of maturity. I'm not sure Juventus is the right
place. This
is
a good shot right here. This player is obviously older, but Acosta, Kellen Acosta can do the Bradley pass. That's, yeah, that's a good shot.
But you lose other things with Kellen Acosta, right? Exactly, especially in that position. And look, Michael Bradley was playing as a defensive midfielder. Tyler Adams isn't being asked to do the same things Bradley did from that same position. Again, Weston McKennie dropping deeper to pick the ball up in those spots, but you also
Michael Bradley, you really routinely see him late in the box on the 18, and so you're not going to see Adams in those positions on the field.
No, that's true. Michael Bradley did do he did cover
remember,
a lot.
Remember, he was playing at a four man with a bucket, so it was a different. He was asked to do a completely different job, not completely, but a fairly different job than what Tyler Adams is being asked to do.
That's true. All right, Matt, appreciate the phone call. There goes Matt from Palmdale. All right, do we make it through?
We gotta get the forwards.
The position group. Sorry, so we got forwards left. Now I'm obviously focused here on starters. We can come to mid to substitutes as well because some of these guys did put in significant work, and I've already mentioned Tim Weah a little bit. All right, so Brendan Aaronson, Ricardo Pepi, and Paul Ariola. You want to start with the surprise Ariola in this game?
Well, like, can we talk about this bad take real quick? Bradley is no legend, and neither is Landy Cakes.
I don't care about those people. Oh, no, that's fine. That's, you know, whatever. Man, look, it's you're. Everybody's got an opinion, and they all stink, so let's just move along.
All right, which forward are we talking about?
Well, Paul Ariola, although we did kind of already give some attention to Ariola. In the,
I think he's a situational guy. He's on the team to be situational. He's Sebastian Legette one line further up. Okay. That's kind of what he is, and there's nothing wrong with that. You need players like that. But I think you can quickly move past him because he may not be there game to game. I think Berhalter knows what he can do, and he wants that effort in certain games.
It's interesting. I mean, look, maybe there would have been a different approach. Maybe the verticality thing would have gone out the window. I don't know how many times we've said that on this show, but again, if you don't want to die, don't play the drinking game of whenever somebody mentions verticality, take a shot. If Gio Reyna is healthy, is he in this team? Is Paul Ariola in this team? I mean, I don't know, and again, I don't know that necessarily means they wouldn't have been
good enough. He might be in Moussa's position.
I don't think he's built to play that. I think Paul Ariola is a wing player.
No, I mean Reyna. If Reyna is
Reyna dropping into mid. Well, but Gio Reyna. Well, it's possible. I suppose that's possible. Just something to think about. All right, let's go to the other side. Brendan Aaronson, who I think continues to gain trust, and as I watch him play, he's consistent. He's so consistent with his effort level. He's always looking for space. He's always making the run. He's always willing. And he's Paul Ariola with that little bit extra of technical ability.
Lighter on his feet, quicker with the ball off his feet. I think that Brendan Aaronson was a little bit guilty of some of the Jorginho Dest disease today. I think a couple times trying to do a little too much, trying to get the perfect play instead of just doing that cross when he's in behind. What's the point of quote-unquote verticality if you don't do service when you get it? And I think that's one of the frustrating things for me watching tonight is they actually executed on that getting behind the defense model that Berhalter was going for. It's just they failed to do the service once they got in those positions. So yeah. I think Brendan Aaronson is able to adjust. I think he had a game where I would put him at just an average night tonight. I don't think he was stupendous. Like I thought some of the games he had the last window were better. But the talent's there. The effort's there. He's going to be a player for this team for quite some time going forward.
Yeah, and obviously we talked about Ricardo Pepi. It is interesting to kind of come back around to the idea of playing a center forward who you don't necessarily have great expectations for, except he might score some goals, right? And then how much were we focused just on goal danger, right? Being somebody who, if the ball goes into the box, we can imagine you scoring that goal. Daryl DK looked like he might have been that guy, and he might still have a role to play at this at some point. But as long as the U.S. is playing with a single center forward, I think Ricardo Pepi is, you know, he's got this job.
Let me ask you a question. When you're up 1-0, 20 minutes to go, and you're pulling Pepe off the field, then which striker do you want in to help you close out a game? Jossy Zardes or Daryl DK?
Wow. You're up 1-0?
You're up 1-0, and you're closing out a game.
I want Jossy Zardes on the field for that, yes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good – DK is a good choice for that as well. If you're going to be dumping balls in, want to get fouls, hold up the ball.
I mean he's going to be physical as hell. He's going to kill center backs at that point in the game. So, yeah, there's that too.
I think it's a good shot either way, but I think in the end I follow with you. I think you want the guy that's going to do the smart thing, even if that smart thing is not going to result in a goal.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to come back. So let's take a look at let's check on the scores here. I know by the time anybody listens to this.
Just so you know, this isn't a score, but the Canada-Mexico game has been pulled off the field for the chant.
I have heard about that. I saw that on Twitter. I also saw that there might have been some confusion over what the fans were yelling, or at least there was a thought that they were yelling
Mexico. Are they saying churro?
Yeah, it's a good question what they were saying. I don't know. It is 1-1 though, right? So the clock is running. They're adding this time. I don't know how this is going to work. But Canada holding their own in the Azteca. I mean, can you imagine? Like, the United States has 1 point in qualifying in the history of World Cup qualifying at the Azteca. Can you imagine if Canada finds a second goal and beats Mexico and wins that game there?
That's a pucker your butt moment for Tata Martino. Even though Mexico's playing well in the cycle so far, dropping points at home to Canada,
yeah,
that would be a could be a deal breaker for them.
He might be gone. And all those MLS teams that have job openings, they're going to be picking up the phone very quickly to get a hold of Tata Martino's people, I would think. No, I mean, you know, there's a lot of moves towards American coaches again, MLS adept coaches, but Tata's done it. He's won a championship, wouldn't you? I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. It is 0-0 between – oh, no, it did finish 0-0 between Honduras and Costa Rica. El Salvador wins. Oh, no, they're up 1-0.
I think Nick was telling me 24 shots by Honduras in that game and just couldn't get – sorry, by Costa Rica. Was it Costa Rica or Honduras, Nicky?
Honduras. At 24 shots against – this Costa Rica team is very bad. I don't know what's going on. I know Eddie in Brooklyn is probably somewhere pulling his hair out over all this stuff. And
the only saving grace is I think that game was in Honduras, right?
It wasn't Honduras, but still, I mean, the United States went out there and whooped Honduras in the second half. A good Costa Rica team should be able to at least play and at least put one of those shots in the back of the net. Okay, so where are we, again, with the Mexico-Canada game still not done yet, and who knows when that'll finish, with El Salvador up 1-0 on Panama.
I believe Mexico and USA are 8 right now. I think it was 8.7 points going into the game with Mexico. So I think they might both be on 8 if this score stands.
This draw would put Canada on 6 after tonight. If it stays a draw, it would put Canada on 6.
Canada's got a chance, man.
El Salvador beating Panama is interesting. Right now, beating Panama is certainly interesting. All right. Anything else before I get the hell out? I'm the last person in the stadium. I don't think there's anybody else here.
I think the only thing that I'm going to leave with is that I'm excited to see what this team, this young team that seems to feed off of rhythm and confidence, what happens to this team when they have 2 wins in a row that were big step-up wins. What does that do for the confidence of this team going down to Panama with 2 wins and 2 games in their back pocket and an informed, confident striker? What does this team look like? This is an exciting time to be for 2 more games to have in this window ahead of us. I just hope Pepe gets another shot midweek.
The rotation is a little interesting. I know we took a call on that earlier. There is going to be some change in this team. So
he could get 3 games if he's getting pulled out 60 minutes of the next 2. Like if the U.S. ends up going 2-0 or something like that, and Pepe gets pulled again, he could get 3 games this window.
Yeah, look, I know you. Greg probably doesn't want to like completely piss off everybody at FC Dallas, but you know they don't have a lot to play for.
I've seen their social media. I think they're pretty happy right now. You don't think they just made a few million dollars off these 2 goals tonight?
That's true. You're right. That's possible. Let's just bump up. How much does he go for? If he does go, how much does he go for?
Man, I think it's around 30 with a sell on.
Excuse me?
That's what Daryl DK was trying to get. Orlando's trying to get for DK, right?
I think they had set it at 20 for Daryl DK, the reserve price for Daryl DK.
And guess what? Who's scoring more goals?
Obviously Ricardo, and he's younger by a couple years, I think, than Daryl DK at this point.
Pepe, Dallas would take less money for a bigger chunk of a sell-on. I think Dallas has a history of doing that. So he's at the right club. He's at the right club for this move, that's for sure.
He's at the right club if he wants to move now. There's definitely some.
But I like that Ajax move so much more than some of the other places he's being linked to right now in terms of staying and getting minutes. Because you really just don't want him to go someplace where he's going to sit the bench and not feel confident.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I'm going to get out of here from Q2 Stadium in Austin, Texas. We do have what you want. You want to get one more caller on okay. the air? Sure. I mean, that's what the show is all about. Let's see. I'm not even sure who this is because I don't have a name.
He's in Austin. It says Joe from Austin.
Joe from Austin. Yeah, Joe, what's up?
Yeah, this is Joe from Austin. Hey, how are you? Long time, first time. I followed you guys forever, and you guys helped me through my 2014 trip to Brazil. Anyway, tonight I down to Austin and took on this game. I got to tell you, Ricardo Pepi is the real deal. Yunus Musa, I didn't understand how big that dude is compared to.
He's a like, hot. Yeah, he's a big
everyone else
boy.
Huh?
He's thick.
Yes, he's thick, right?
He's a big boy, man.
He looks like a
18 year old. He's a man.
Yeah, he looks like a running back.
I mean, he was lost in the midfield.
A blue chip.
I gotta say, you guys made a great point. Sorry. You guys made a great point about the system or the players. I think the first half, you could tell, and Musa was the guy I concentrated on. The first half, you could see that he's a little tentative. He wants to do what he was told to do. And the second half, I don't know what Greg told him, but the first 10 minutes of that second half, he let loose. And he's the reason we scored that first goal, right? He's the one that pushed the game. And that goes on the players. That's the experience you were talking about. Yeah. And I just want to acknowledge that was a great, great point by you guys.
All right.
Right on, Joe. Thanks for coming. Thanks for watching the show. I've been the show for so long.
And then, And I got to say, Austin's a great town. I hope the U.S. comes back here. They've been great hosts. The crowd was fantastic. Jason, I hope you agree. And I hope, we keep going here. Panama is going to be a good test. We'll see who Greg picks for the lineup. And hopefully Weston's injury, towards the end of that game, he was limping a little bit. I didn't really like that. But hopefully he's okay to play. And then we get some good results here. Anyway, guys, thanks for all you do for not only on the podcast for all of us, but also U.S. soccer for many, many years. All right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Joe. Joe from Austin. I will say there was some concern because of the kickoff time in Austin that the stadium wouldn't be filled at kickoff. It wasn't completely filled. It filled in a little bit more, but it was rocking. It was ready. Austin did a really good job. There is always this question about
there are a few Olays away from being a real big Olays.
Well, AO, you mentioned AO. AO's got to get on the Olays. I mean, they did some good stuff tonight. Shout out to Donald Wine, who I saw, leading the charge.
We got to tell Donald instead of Olays, they should do AOLay.
They could do some of that. Yes, you're right. They could do some of that. All right. Any final thoughts, Mr. Dubois?
No, if you enjoyed the show, hit subscribe and hit that bell so you know next time we go live right after. We won't have a delay the next two games. So come back here for some live talk after the game Sunday and also next week as well. So make sure you're following us. Make sure you know where to get us so you can participate in the community as well.
Yeah, and a quick mention for the Patreon people, the besties. Shout out to Dolph. I met some besties here in Austin. Got a chance to hang out with Allison last night. Shout out to Allison.
I heard some shots were had.
Some shots were had. Just a few enough
shots. Just the
tip?
Oh, just the shot.
I had some shots. They were not – I was very careful not to take every shot I was offered. What I wanted to say is –
just the tip of the shot.
If you join up with the Patreon, you get stuff like the bonus show every week. The bonus show is off the rails. It's not always about soccer. This past one, we played Name That 90s Tune for like an hour and a half.
It was supposed to be a 30-minute bonus show, and we just kept going and going. And Nick wiped the floor with me.
It was wild. Nicky Soup and Salad's wheelhouse is 90s music of all genres. The man.
We get out of here, though, Nick, do you want to have any of those reviews we're supposed to be chipping away at? Do you want to get one right here, or is that not for this show?
Okay, I don't think that's tonight. The issue. I think the tech issues and me scrambling for this booth and everything, that's got Nick a little bit off. That's okay. We'll do it on we'll probably do it on the next regular show, because we have another post-game show coming up on Sunday with the Panama game and another post-game show coming up next Wednesday with the game in Columbus against Costa Rica. All right. For Nicky Zubin Salad and Jared Dubois, Jason Davis from Q2 Stadium, we'll talk to you guys on Sunday. Bye. Only the best will do. Only the best will do. Only the best will do. For you. For you. For you. Jay Rhodius.